minutes and get all the guys pointing at the headset at me. That's not what happened. It's the Fan Warning Show. I'm JD Bunkus, a guy who never forgets to turn off the mute of his mic. He's very professional, nails it every single time. The nail gun. Blake Murphy, Justin Cuthbert didn't just signal to me. We're going to talk to Bomani Jones in a couple minutes here. He's about to come on. But we keep getting these stories from people. First of all, we have an update. I haven't read it yet. Show, where'd you put it? In the doc? Okay, yeah. We have an update from Megan because we're doing awkward athlete interactions today after we talked to Colby Armstrong. She said, he was super kind, though, but then I had to awkwardly wait to cross the road together, and the memory on my phone was so full, so I couldn't even ask to take a picture. I don't understand, Megan. You're a bad storyteller over text. It's like he said, I wish you never told me that, and then he crossed the street, but he was super kind, and then you had to wait. So he was just crossing the street.
He must have been joking around, like, oh, I wish you never told me that, like something like that where it's, you know, in jest, and then you get your phone out, you got the story, complete pictures in time, and it's just a complete disaster.
Well, the most awkward part of the story, though, for Megan is clearly this, which is that he's not crossing the street to get away from her. He wasn't a jerk. The awkward moment is that they obviously had to cross the street at a light. And when you're standing there with someone, it's like, you ever have that person at work? You go, hey, see you later, have a great weekend, and I'll catch you later. And then you bump into each other on the same street corner 2 seconds later, and you have to wait at a traffic light, and you've already got your headset in, and you're like, ah.
Yeah, why do you think I take the weird route out of the office when we're in the studio?
I'm so glad you do. Thank God you do. There's nothing worse than that, where you've already said your goodbye to someone, and then you have to do the oh, so where are you going? Oh, I'm going home. Oh, cool. Me as well. It's awful. It's awful, awful, awful. I wish we could just get to a point in society where you could just say, like, you could just, like, smile and then listen to your headset. But even when you stare forward, no one's cool enough to pull that off. No one. Not anybody on the planet. Keep these stories coming.
The most cringe one I've experienced, well, I guess firsthand, it wasn't me. I was at an Angels-Twins game in Minnesota. Back when it was like pre-Target Field, when they still played in the Metrodome. And a friend of mine yelled out to Torrey Hunter that he had him on his fantasy roster, and so he needed a big game. And Torrey Hunter just like put him on blast for like fantasy being dumb and like fantasy doesn't count my defense. And it was very amusing. I don't know if my friend has ever recovered. He like just dumb. Hated Torrey Hunter after that.
That's a tough one.
My defense.
Yeah. There's actually a lot of Torrey. My brother has a Torrey Hunter story too. Like, Torrey Hunter is someone who gave it back to fans pretty consistently throughout his baseball career. So a lot of people out there have Torrey Hunter moments. I like this one a lot from Jimmy, who just DM'd me on Instagram. We'll have to wait that one later because we have our next guest on the line.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. We're joined now by Emmy winning sports journalist, commentator, and host of the new late-night series Game Theory with Bomani Jones, which debuts this Sunday, March 13th at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Bomani Jones, good morning, man. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm good. How about you?
Doing well here in Toronto. I'm really excited for your new show, Game Theory with Bomani Jones, which starts Sunday at 11:30. Tell us a little bit about the show and what you hope to accomplish with kind of a new take on this space with a late night talk show focused on sports.
Well, I mean, I think one thing I hope to accomplish is to get picked up for season two. I'm not sure like how much grander the ambitions of accomplishment are beyond that. But what we're doing really is we're taking the kind of work and stuff that I've been doing in various places for the last 20 years and now putting it on the road with just a lot more help, a lot more resources, a lot more people, a lot more experience for me to know like what kinds of things I can and can't do and that I do and I don't want to do. So like we're stepping into this knowing that a late night show on sports ain't something that I don't think anybody has actually made work up until this point. But what we're hoping is that what we can do is take my opinions and my thoughts and some of the scattered things that hit my mind in talking about sports and then put that before the whole team and be like, okay, so how do we make this happen? How do we bring this idea into three dimensions? And I think what's going to happen is we're going to be able to do what is at times commentary, what is at times comedy. We're going to have some interviews and stuff that can also get deep on top of being fun and everything else. But primarily, I want this to be a good time for everybody who watches it. But I think that we're going to be able to approach things from so many different angles that you're going to tune in and not be sure. Like, you may know we're going to talk about a story, but you ain't going to know how.
Mm-hmm.
And that, see, that's always...
Well, I was just going to say, like, that's what Blake and I were discussing yesterday when we were getting ready for your show or getting ready to talk to you, is that we're both fans of yours. Like, we're both fans of Bomani Jones, to the point where some of the topics of that we were kind of thinking about hitting on with you today, we just thought, hey, let's just leave it as open-ended as possible, because there's a very strong likelihood that Bomani's going to have a spin on things that we find to be unpredictable. But, yeah, you've been around for a long time, and this format is just – it's a format that, you just said it, it hasn't had a lot of success, and there's a point of curiosity of like, hey, where is content going now, right? Where are we going with this stuff? And it seems like we either want things in these little micro doses, right, where it's an Instagram reel, where we'll go, okay, you'll watch a highlight of a game on Instagram, but you don't want to watch the full game, you don't even want to watch pieces of the game, or you don't want pieces of that content that are much longer than that. Or people are gravitating towards podcasts where you go, yeah, I'll sit down for 3 hours on the Russell Wilson trade with the right person, right? You'll go through this thing bit by bit, every little piece. So when you were kind of doing this and you're coming up with this show and you're getting these resources, where do you think kind of like the thing that maybe we're losing when it comes to this format specifically, like where there is an angle for you to, exploit an audience that we have seen is kind of getting smaller and harder to capture?
Well, I think the angle for me on this one is that I can do a combination of things that not that many people could do. So I think part of why sports and late night hasn't worked, that you got to have a combination of two things. First thing you got to have is somebody whose opinions that the viewers are going to respect. And then you've got to have somebody with the right set of talents to do like all the entertainment type stuff, or to find the middle ground. Because I'm not a comedian. That was the first thing I told them walking in, is that that's not me. And so in terms of finding the space, I think people often are a little too strategic when they talk about that, because they're trying to figure out what the angle is and what's this one thing that we can talk about and everything else. And what you can really do is make a good show, right? Like, that's number one. Now you say, okay, well then how many people will be interested in that type of good show? Because you can do a really good show that only two people are interested in. Well, the thing about making a show like this work, for me at least, one, I've been doing this, like, especially at the ESPN level, for like 15 years. So there's a number of people who are familiar with me and then want to check it out. The key is going to be the people that they tell, like, hey, you might want to check out Bomani's show. Oh, who's that? Okay, well, how do you get those people that may not know you as well, and honestly, in some cases, may not be sports fans in the biggest way? That's where getting into the overlap, or where some of this stuff connects with larger issues, and honestly, sometimes with, like, smaller issues. Broader issues is probably the better definition of it. But once it taps into something that somebody can relate to, even if they're not the biggest fan of sports, the same way sports can take us to places and take us to things that we might have been that into in the first place, I think that's where you're going to wind up doing this. So, like, I think a bit of the success of this is going to hinge on, hopefully I can keep up what for me has been a compliment a lot of people have given me over time, which is, you know, my insert term for significant other here, right? We use wife in this one. My wife normally doesn't like sports and doesn't watch them with me, but she'll listen to your show with me if we're in the car, because it gets to a place that they can also understand. And so you're going to lose in this if you try to take nuts and bolts sports to a broad audience. The nuts and bolts sports audience is actually not that large. Like, working in this business, you know how lucrative that audience could be to advertisers, but you also know how small that audience could be at times. So we got to hit those people in ways that they can appreciate the nuts and bolts folks. But how this is going to work is for people to understand how broad and universal themes are on the topics that we discuss.
Well, I also think that there's something to what's so challenging about TV sometimes is you take certain personalities, you put them there, you put them on these shows, and they're not able to translate who they are, the authentic piece that made you like either a writer or this isn't to throw shade at anyone, but I remember Bill Simmons' show, right? And I think owners should pay for their own damn sports teams. And it just didn't work because people who were fans of Bill Simmons, it wasn't the same Bill Simmons that translated to, yeah, television. I think with you, having seen a lot of your work that is on camera as well, is just simply, I think that there is an authenticity to your work that is going to translate well here. And so when you do those topics, I think people, when they watch a television show or sometimes it can feel generic, it can feel segmented, it can feel like something that's like rigid. I really do believe that you're the right guy for a show like this to be able to just carry it through and maintain being like who you are on radio interviews, podcasts, shows that you've done before, and into television.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. But I think that in this case, it's going to be less in some ways about maintaining who I am, and in some ways it's going to be about being in a better position to display it. So, like, when you're doing, like, a daily sports show on ESPN, this is just the nature of the format. It's nobody's fault. It's like, I think the people view ESPN sometimes as, like, oh, these wildly uncreative people who don't want to do anything new. But it's a utility for a lot of people. Like, when they want sports news, they want the sports news. And the audience that they deal with has a certain way that they like stuff, and you got to kind of accomplish it in that way. But if you have to serve that particular sort of goal, no matter who you are, there's only been so much room for, like, quote-unquote personality. So, like, if I'm doing if I'm doing High Noon, for example, there ain't that much room for me to talk about how much I love music. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not the place on it. But on this show, if there's a dope musician that for whatever reason there's an overlap in the sports, then I can have that person on here and then find a way to make it work that might go more in one direction or another. So for this show, for my folks in Toronto who remember when I had a show on the Score Satellite Radio called The Morning Jones, my view of this is we're going to take that show where I was like coming up with faux documentaries and I had all the callers who would call in and say whatever and all of that kind of stuff. We had all the room to do whatever we wanted. I'm now in a position to like put that on television. So for every television show that I've done before, it's really been a matter of fitting my personality into a construct that already existed. What we're doing here is, they're like, hey, that's Bomani. We like him. How do we build a show around that?
I like that, Bomani. And again, everyone, we're talking to Bomani Jones, whose new show, Game Theory with Bomani Jones, debuts this Sunday, March 13th, on HBO and HBO Max, and that's Crave in Canada as well. So, Bomani, one of my favorite things about you is obviously the day-to-day stuff's awesome. You're a great host, and we like your insights. I feel like you really shine when sports stories kind of intersect with a bigger idea or a bigger philosophical. And I hope that that's the space you get with this show. So one thing that's come up recently that immediately when I heard about this show, I'm like, oh, that I would love to hear a Bomani Jones show on that is the Calvin Ridley situation in the NFL where, you know, whatever you think of that specific instance, this is obviously a huge thing and it's the first in what's probably going to be a long line of discussions around gambling and sports. What was your initial reaction to the Calvin Ridley suspension and him, you know, being found to have gambled $1,500 on the NFL?
Oh, he's dumb as a box of rocks. like sometimes, and this is one where it's going to be fun, where I think this show will have a value in the overlap of sometimes bringing us down off the ledge of the big things, because I think there are a lot of people who fairly and understandably have projected a measure of doom and gloom as it relates to gambling being involved in sports. And there's a lot of angles on it that I think are worth discussing. But the one that I think that people are really too worried about is the idea that now all of a sudden all the players are going to start gambling and they're going to be out here throwing games and all that stuff. All those temptations and everything else is there. The difference between now and before is before you had to gamble and even if you didn't have the money, right? Like the people you need to worry about are the people who bet on, shall we say, the honor system. Because then you put yourself in a position to be threatened, to be extorted, all of those things because you need money. At least Calvin Ridley was betting with somebody that required him to have the money up front. Like that part was helpful. But what got me and what I don't think people understand about this, and this is, I guess, where Ridley is not dumb as a box of rocks. We're out of the space of the generation of sports where gambling terrified everybody. So you don't have the constant messaging in the media about do not gamble, do not gamble, do not gamble. But that's not about sports gambling being legal. They stopped that along the way there. And so for him, he's looking up and he's like, what's the big deal? I bet on my own team. Right? It's not like I bet for us to lose. I bet for us to win. What's the problem? I'm only exhibiting confidence in my friends. But there are just discussions about gambling that players really haven't been having for a very, very long time. And so this dude cost himself $12 million betting $1,500. That's bad math.
It certainly is, man. It's and that's well put. Another one I wanted your take on, and again, I know you might get into this on the show in the next couple of weeks. Game Theory Sunday nights at 11:30 on HBO and HBO Max. Crave here in Canada. Tonight's a pretty big night in the NBA, and I know you're a basketball guy. James Harden with the 76ers rather, against the Brooklyn Nets. There's the Kyrie Irving factor. There's surely Kevin Durant is going to be fired up for that one. How much are you looking forward to that storyline playing out, not just tonight, but, you know, hopefully and potentially through the Eastern Conference playoffs?
Yeah, see, I don't really care about how it plays out tonight because it's just kind of a regular season game. And it's like, I think I would feel different if Harden played there for like 3 years and there was some real anger and animosity between the sides, and I'm not really gauging that as being present. But the playoffs are where it gets fun, where it's entirely possible. My man, Vinny Goodwill, the guy who made this point, it's entirely possible that Kyrie, if Brooklyn and Philadelphia played in the series, Kyrie would only play road games and Ben Simmons would only play home games. That really might happen. That's what's crazy to me.
Yeah. Oh, God. I really wish we were getting the Ben Simmons return. It's kind of an unfortunate piece that we're not getting it. So it's not the full compliment, right? You're dead on, of course. The playoffs are what matters. We desperately need this playoff matchup. But I wonder if there is something extra to this matchup, though, too, of, hey, we just experienced this, the Canada-USA women's hockey gold medal game, right? And the one thing that we kept coming away from it was, you know what was really refreshing about it? It's that there's real hate between those two teams, like real sports hate. And that plays itself out when they're against each other is the stakes feel so immense because of the personal animus between the two sides. And the one thing I'm excited for with this is, you're right, okay, James Harden didn't play with Brooklyn for forever, but who walks away from Kevin Durant in Kevin Durant's prime this way? They got together and they made the super team. We all thought that they were going to basically run the Eastern Conference for a couple of years. In fact, I remember feeling disappointed when it first happened, thinking, now we don't really get to ever find out with KD because the team is too good and it's basically just Warriors East. Now we have it, and there are real foils. Like, the Eastern Conference is deep this year, but this matchup, maybe even they don't hate each other, but it sure felt that way when Kevin Durant was doing his All-Star picks and he took Rudy Gobert over James Harden. It sure feels that way when he just says things like, yeah, that's my brother no matter what, but doesn't elaborate further on it. It sure feels that way when James Harden goes to the podium and says that his first destination was supposed to be Philadelphia in general. Like, does this have an added importance for the NBA in just that it's a league where oftentimes we look at it as a fraternity and that there are a lot of friendships, and that it is not a league where there's a lot of sports hate, that this offers a different kind of avenue, a different kind of opportunity rivalry-wise?
Absolutely. I'm all here for the hate. I'm glad you made that point, because I think at this point in the NBA, we spend more time looking at teams that hate each other rather than teams that hate other teams. And it is more fun when there's actual beef. You know, these guys all grew up playing together, so they've all known each other forever. So they're like, oh, we're all friends. I would think that that would make some of y'all hate each other a little bit more myself, right? You know, familiarity, contempt, all that stuff. So, like, having a rivalry with real stakes to it in that way would be great. The problem is, I live in New York City, and let me tell you what, don't nobody give a damn about, brother, the Brooklyn Nets.
So, isn't this the way, though?
Won't get charged up in that way. Like, if this were Sixers Knicks, New York would be on edge at every turn about that. But unfortunately, it's Sixers Nets, and that just don't land the same way.
So could we end up making it, though, where it is a blend? Because at least we have Philly where, okay, they're going to care. They're going to care deeply about not losing that team. And they're going to care deeply about not losing to Ben Simmons. So maybe it's a little bit more one-sided, but that you end up with kind of just the right mix of players. Ben Simmons, the guy that Philly feels like they have the mental edge on, where if he shows up there, they're going to be able to say, we can get in this guy's head. We as a crowd can impact this game. You have Joel Embiid, who loves clashing with other guys, right? He's not afraid to do that. He's not afraid to go head-to-head with someone and have beef. In fact, we even have that a little bit with Harden. Like, he had the Giannis thing, right? Where he goes, hey, it's easy to be 7 feet tall and just dunk, right? That's all you need to do. But it just feels like the league has all the right players in this matchup that maybe those guys, that they can kind of supersede the market inefficiency.
Yeah, and let me tell you, that Simmons part, I don't think people have talked enough about, like, the levels of this. As much as people talk about Philadelphia being hard on people, they were remarkably gentle on Simmons as things weren't going well for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want to say that the crowd was reassuring, but they held a lot back in spite of what might have frustrated them. If he has mental health issues on the level at which he's kind of intimated to us that they are, or that there was something about being in Philadelphia perhaps that wound up causing a problem to exacerbate those things, those boos are going to rain down on him like nobody's business. So I'm like, if what he's saying about having these problems is really what it is, right? I'm not saying he's not telling the truth. I just don't know him like that. If he's saying he's really got those problems, I don't know how he's going to handle three or four games in that building. I just have absolutely no clue because I just can't think of the – they ain't got no reason to be like, hey, we don't want people to think we're bullying a guy because of his mental health. No, they're going to try to break him.
You know what, though? I hadn't thought about this until right now, but – do you think that this is potentially a tipping point moment for fan interactions with players? Because we've been doing this for a while now, right? Which is, what is the line when it comes to athletes and players and being at games? Like, this has just cropped up with the Westbrook thing, right? And it feels like everyone pretty much universally went against Russell Westbrook with the Westbrook thing because, hey, that's pretty tame. If you pay for courtside seats and you yell Westbrook, you should not be ejected for that. You should not be viewed as a villain for that. It's a little bit more complicated with this thing overall, but we have learned, like, hey, these things, like fan interactions with players, like they've changed. And fans in general, in terms of the way that it's appreciated versus players, has changed. Like, I'm thinking back to Kevin Durant's return home to Oklahoma City, and that even felt a little tame. The whole he's a cupcake thing was the main thing that it was. But this does feel like it could be worse, much worse, especially if it's a playoff series in Philly. Do you think that we end up having a scenario here, though, yeah, where it becomes even further unacceptable, or we discover that there is a new line when it comes to jeering visiting players?
I mean, see, my question has always been how much different things have been, right? Like, let us not forget, it was 27 years ago that Vernon Maxwell went in the crowd and punched somebody for making a joke about his stillborn child. Like these things have gone on. The Palace was almost 20 years ago, and that started largely because of indefensible fan behavior. So I don't know if the line has gotten so much different. But with Simmons, I'm thinking less about like particular things people are going to say to him than just the volume of what it is that's going to take place. I thought the Westbrook thing was interesting, though, because on one level, I absolutely agree with the idea that, hey, that's pretty tame. But I also can get kind of on principle the idea of family name. And so there are a lot of people who I think would throw that out there, and I think that they would be disingenuous. But that's really how this dude is wired. And so I looked at that and was like, you probably should have kept that to yourself because it's not going to elicit any sympathy. But as Bomani Babatunde Jones, who people think it's cute to try to make manipulations of that name, I get why even Russell Westbrook would be like, nah, we're not going to do that. Now, of course, if they were calling him Bestbrook because he the best, I don't think he would find that to be disrespectful.
Yeah, yeah. Also, if you got $45 million for your new show and they were like, hey, someone's going to make fun of your name, you'd probably be like, okay, maybe a little bit more. You know, like, okay, maybe.
Yeah, but let me tell you about this, and that's something I've learned about that money stuff. All that stuff is true in the when you do the math at the end, but while it's happening, like if I would tell you, hey, I'm going to give you $45 million, but I got to hit you in the face with a baseball bat. After your face heals, you'll have $45 million. Yeah. While you're getting hit with a baseball bat, it's going to feel like you got hit with a baseball bat.
Yeah. Maybe a little different, though. Maybe a little different, though, there's $45 million attached to it. You know, like just a tiny bit.
Maybe just a bit. Bomani Jones, hope they're paying you well for the new show. Maybe not $45 million, but can't wait to see it. Sunday, March 13th on HBO, HBO Max, Crave here in Canada, Game Theory with Bomani Jones. Bomani, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man, and best of luck with the new show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's Bomani Jones. Really excited. Game Theory with Bomani Jones. Sunday, March 13th, 11:30 p.m., HBO and HBO Max. Something you could get just as excited for, maybe even more excited. I don't know. We're giving away a pair of tickets to the March 15th game against Dallas. All you have to do is download yesterday and today's episodes of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the different code words that will be placed in the podcast. Text each code word to 590-590, and you'll be entered for a chance to win. Each code word counts as an entry. The winner will be selected Friday. That's March 15th. Leafs, Stars, Klingberg, free tickets. Fan Morning Show podcast. Text the code words to 590-590.
I have regrets about the Bomani interview. Just in that I didn't ask him for an awkward athlete story on the way out, because he definitely has one, and it's probably very good, and I'm sorry for forgetting to do that. Great storyteller, someone who would have had one, absolutely. Because, yeah, he is someone who likes to crack a joke, too. And if you're someone who likes to crack a joke, you're going to fail every once in a while. Like, you're going to fall flat.
You take on that risk.
Listen, if you follow stand-up comedy, you know that even the great ones, in their prime, bomb. They bomb in their prime in different rooms. So, absolutely, sports commentators, even the best among us, we can make mistakes. You got something to cut through? I'm going to read another.
I was just going to say, let's be honest. He'd have something for Steve Nash in an elevator.
Yeah, he would. He probably would have something for Steve Nash in an elevator. Okay, so this one comes from Jimmy. He sent this one to me on Instagram in the DMs. I love this one. My brother, friends, and I went to Cancun about 10 years ago. Greg Oden was there with his friends for a bachelor party. We did shots with him and partied at the club, which was awesome. A Jay-Z Kanye song comes on, and there's a part that Jay-Z goes, Jackson, Tyson, Jordan, game six. My brother decided to substitute Jordan for Oden, the absolute loudest he could yell at right next to Greg Oden. The guy was not pleased. We didn't see him for the rest of our trip. His career was already over at that point. It was so cringe. We never let my brother down live for that one. That's so good. The fact that his career was over, and as disappointing as it was, and that the substitution is from Michael Jordan, is like, honestly, I love my brother to death. If he did that in front of me, I think I'd go white as a sheet, and I would just stare mouth agape at him. How could you ever think that this was a good idea? How could
that's
you
spectacular.
Possibly?
That's spectacular.
No, that's the best one. There's no way that anybody's going to beat that. That's just too good.
And it's the best one because it ruined a relationship that was, I won't say thriving or flourishing.
No, yeah, you were having a good time. Yeah, you were
having
a good time.
You were having a good time with it, and you completely ruined it.
Yeah, you had a real you're doing shots, you're with Greg Oden, you're with a bunch of guys who are having a great time, you're just, hey, we're all now a group together. This actually happened to a friend of mine down in Florida a couple of years ago where he was at a bachelor party, and their bachelor party amalgamated with another one that had Rob Gronkowski involved, and they partied with Gronk for a little while, and they got to party with Gronk down in Florida, and it was great. But guess what they didn't do? They didn't start rapping to Gronk. They didn't start trying to overextend the relationship with Rob Gronkowski. They just kept it kind of cool and let Gronk be Gronk and stayed just around the fringes of the situation, you know? And this is just so good. This guy got so excited. Oh, God. The lead-up moment to that where he's the Jordan, and he's going, oh, I'm going to put it. Oden screams it in his face. It's, and you know what the best part? There's so many good layers to this. I like to believe that Greg Oden heard that and thought, not are you a fanboy, but just, you're insulting me. You know, that's an insult.
Oh, yeah. He knows he's not like, anywhere near Michael
Jordan. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, in fact, the only thing that he has in common with Michael Jordan is that he's basically Sam Bowie. They're drafted to the same franchise. They were both busts, and they both had amazing Hall of Fame players taking behind them. That's so good. Thank you
this
for sharing
is,
that one.
That story is a good reminder that when life presents you with an obvious victory, like getting to party with Greg Oden or getting to bachelor party with Gronk or something like that, and it's this weird unexpected thing, take the win and move on. Don't double down on free money that life just happens to hand you. If you get a win, take it, move on. We might be able to say the same thing to the owners of Major League Baseball franchises. We're going to reset what the lockout's looking like right now with Jim Duquette, former Orioles and Mets general manager and analyst with MLB Network Radio. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, Justin Cuthbert, J.D. Bunkus. Huge, huge, just unbelievably ground-shaking news coming out of Major League Baseball during the break. The Blue Jays have signed Joe Biagini to a minor league deal. Yes, somehow minor league transactions are still able to be taking place. Obviously, everyone wants to talk about the major league transactions. We need a CBA for that. To help us sort through that is Jim Duquette. This insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Jim Duquette, former Orioles and Mets GM, analyst with MLB Network Radio. How are you doing this morning, man? And are you tired of CBA talk yet?
What's up, guys? Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I think we tapped out wanted to tap out about, 80 days ago. Yeah, we're close to pushing 100 days. I think tomorrow, I believe, is day 100 if we don't have an agreement. So, yeah, I think like everybody around the sport that likes to talk about it, likes to watch it, I think we're all really, really tapped out and frustrated by this garbage.
Yeah, especially considering us in Toronto, who are excited to see this team. It's like one of the most exciting young teams we've ever had. And it's 100 days of this instead of 100 days of talking about, can Vladdy get even better? Can Bo get even better? What are they going to do at third base? What are they going to do with the outfield? Like, that's the most frustrating part to me, is that it robs people of the ability just to enjoy the teams and the players that they love. So the other part of this frustration, Jim, has been, okay, these new issues keep cropping up. Essentially, it's, okay, we were told and we basically understand that this is all about money. This is all about what is basically an artificial salary cap and what the ceiling of it is, and then what the floor is for the lowest paid players in the MLB. Yesterday, we're getting this positive momentum and everyone's starting to feel good again, and it reminds me of about a week and a half ago where we felt the exact same thing. It's getting later in the night. We're going, oh, it's meeting number 14. Maybe they're going to get a deal. All of a sudden, the international draft becomes this massive sticking point. And for a casual fan, hell, not even a casual fan, like a real person who covers baseball like myself on a daily basis, goes, the international draft? How is this such a sticking point? Marley Rivera of ESPN, she just tweeted this, quote, "The international draft has been a volatile topic for over a decade. It is a complicated issue that has gotten barely any mainstream coverage until 24 hours ago. And it is a topic that deserves deeper examination than being treated as a throw-in in coverage of CBA negotiations," end quote. So can you explain to us what she means or why this has now become the major issue in the negotiations?
Marley, by the way, is spot on. Now, when it was 20 years ago, the first time this even came up. So there's a lot of taking advantage of 14, 15, and 16-year-old kids in the Dominican Republic that's wrapped into this international draft. The reason why they want to do it is that teams have try to circumvent the rules of baseball, and they come to these agreements that are not enforceable. They're against the rules, but they're very difficult to vet out down in the Dominican Republic. When you find a kid that's a really talented 14-year-old that lives out in the rural, Western Dominican Republic, like close to the Haiti border, right? That's way out. And being able to find that guy, if he's a really talented player, you can come to an agreement and sign this kid as 14. You can loan him some money, which is life-changing for the family, all under the table that, very difficult to figure out or find that out. And you can take that player and hide him, and not expose him to 29 other teams. So that goes on. I would say not necessarily as regularly as it used to, but it still goes on, right? So there's a whole exploitation that goes on with these kids. It's why it's an important topic, but it's something that Major League Baseball has been trying to get their hands around for a long time, and they still have had a hard time doing it. And the process of the way they do it now, which is make these players free agents, it's not really working, right? So I'm in favor of the international draft to help control some of this rogue signings that go on and exploitation that goes on. But to what Marley's point, it shouldn't be attached to anything that's going on with the CBA, anything that's attached to Major League free agents or any of that nature. Like, that's a Major League Baseball problem, a front office problem. In fact, it's a Dominican Republic issue that they need to address as well. This should not be part of the negotiation. I think that's the part that gets really frustrating about this, is it feels like it was just thrown in at the end.
Are you surprised at all that the players' union has taken such a hard line against it? And I know, something like 20 to 25% of players in Major League Baseball, and therefore as part of the union, would have come from these systems. So they obviously care about people from where they're from and the next generation of players. But from a pure self-interest standpoint, it does seem a little like that's a chip that current players, whom the changes wouldn't affect, might be willing to use. Are you surprised it's as big a sticking point as it is? And does that signal to you anything other than the players want something in return for conceding something? Or is there, you know, is there an element of, hey, the PA is trying to take a longer term health of baseball approach to this deal after getting kind of sewered in the last few CBAs?
Yeah. Well, I think the answer, you know, that's a, there's a lot that's in there. I do think there's a combination of things. First off, I think there are a certain number of the foreign players in Dominican Republic players or even Venezuelan players that are affected, that were affected by this. And they're like, you know what? We don't know what the new system is. We don't know if it's going to be any better than what it is. We know what this current system is, and it worked for me. So it should, you know, it'll work for them. Don't change it. Right? There's that level. There are some former players that have, we'll call them academies down in those countries, that see some of this stuff going on firsthand, and they're raising their hand saying, hey, you need to change the system. You need, Melvin Moore is a friend of mine, a former major leaguer. He has an academy. He runs things the right way. He sees, you know, the some of the fraudulent things that are going on, and he's been for it. Others have been for it. David Ortiz, who came out against it only in the sense that he's like, you know what? I'm actually for it, but not now. Like, I would like to see something implemented in time after further discussion of how to fix the system. So, you know, there's different pockets of that group that are for it, but they're not for it now, or they're for it because, you know, they don't want change, or they're fearful of what the, you know, they think a lot of ways the new system that comes into place will be worse for the players, not better. And I think if you can assure them of that, they would be supportive of it. So it's a complicated answer to your question. And I don't think there's any one answer that kind of, you know, sums it all up. I think that there's a different feelings and different opinions about the international draft just within that segment of the foreign player.
Yeah, it's certainly a tough one to address, and a lot of layers we could sort through. One thing that's a little easier to understand is the economic side of these things. And yeah, it did feel like things were getting close yesterday. You can go back and you can look at the, you know, the kind of starting points when negotiations really picked up, you know, let's say a couple weeks ago after that 43-day freeze or whatever it is. And the players have come down on some things like, hey, the escalations in the minimum salary or the escalations in the CBT. And the league has come around with a little bit of bumps to the initial levels and things like that.
Sure.
So where are you at in terms of your optimism that something gets done fairly quickly? Because usually when we talk about these things, it's the economic issues that rule the day. And it does seem, compared to some other sports and even previous baseball stoppages, that the international drafting is a novel roadblock, but if the economic stuff gets sorted out, maybe it's a more manageable thing. Like where is your optimism level at as the two sides get closer on numbers?
So I think that if they take the international draft and they put it aside, all right, they detach it from these negotiations, and they just have an understanding. We will come to an agreement by November, right? Which was, by the way, proposed last night. You know, hey, all right, detach the compensation, draft pick compensation to the qualifying offer guys, and just do that now. And we'll talk about the international draft. If we don't come to an agreement by November, then we'll add the compensation back to the free agents, to the guys that are offered the qualifying offer. If they just do that, I think we could have a deal by tomorrow. That's how frustrating this is. They are that close, in my opinion, to doing something on the financial front. And do they have to make up on the competitive balance, the pool of money for the non-arbitration eligible? You know, there's a decent size gap there. It's like 40 million to 80 million, right? Owners have 40 million. There's no ramp up. You know, there's 80 million for the players. There's a ramp up to that each of the five years. But I think there's a deal that you can get to pretty quickly, and you can do it by tomorrow, and we can have 162 games. But the problem is, the longer this goes, and guys are, you know, oh, I want to, you know, there becomes this big ego as part of the negotiation. And you saw that with Manfred last night. They made an offer after the 6 p.m., this arbitrary 6 p.m. deadline. So, and Manfred says, I'm not going to accept your proposal. Like, stuff like that, the more that goes on, and the rancor, and they're pointing fingers at each other, The longer you delay this, then the season does become a problem. Then, you know, the service time, you know, full service time becomes another issue that they have to work out. Are you going to get full pay for less games? It becomes more complicated. And so, you know, then the likelihood of missing way more games becomes a possibility. So there is a more sense of urgency now. I haven't been concerned to this point, honestly, that we were going to get a deal. I feel like if we get a deal by tomorrow, I still will feel, hey, this has just been a really hard, difficult negotiation. But beyond tomorrow, I am getting concerned that we're going to miss a full month of the season.
Jim, the deadlines have come and went somewhat arbitrarily, too. But if I'm not mistaken, they've now pushed it back to Jackie Robinson Day. And that is an immensely important day for baseball, even more important this year with the 75th anniversary, I believe. Is that sort of the pressure point now? Like, you know, it was okay to miss a few series. It was okay to go past opening day. But is that where the pressure is? And given how close it seems they should be, is that what eventually, you know, causes both sides to put down their weapons and make this thing happen? Yeah.
You would think that the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier would be you know, incentive enough, right, to not cancel any more games if it gets to that point. And I do think that is a line of demarcation where the players can still get full pay. Like last year, they wanted to reduce the schedule to, I think it was 144 games because the virus was there's still some uncertainty with the COVID. They were going to pay them for a full year, but only have them play 144 games. It might have been 154 games, but there's already this precedent that was built that the owners, you know, set out there that the players in their mind, like, hey, we're getting full pay no matter what. We're getting full service time no matter what. And so, you know, I think if we started the season at that point, would it stink to miss the first 2 weeks of the season? Of course it would. But, yeah, I think the players would get what they want. I think the owners would still get full pay on the TV deals, which is important to them. So I do feel like that if these things continue to drag out, you know, it wouldn't be financially ruinous. But I do worry, I don't know what you guys and people, your listeners, I do worry about the sport and not talking about the opportunities. Like you said, hey, Bo Bichette, is he going to get better this year? How much better is he going to get? You know, how much better is Vladdy going to get at first base? Like, we've missed these opportunities to promote the sport. Will it rebound? Yeah, probably so. But I think we've missed the opportunity to continue to grow it, which is a huge problem in and of itself. So I don't like the way the tenor's gone. It does concern me with the longer we sit out or sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, turns out we all love baseball, and we'd rather be talking about baseball than economics. Jim Duquette, hopefully next time we have you on, it's to talk real baseball and not boardroom stuff. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
You got it, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
Jim Duquette, MLB Network. That Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. We've got a few minutes here. We've got Leafs Coyotes tonight at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet. JD, do you have any more of those cringe athlete encounters kicking around? The look on your face says yes.
Yeah, I do. Well, I was actually laughing because I just opened it up to close the show, and I got the message from Jimmy's brother, Sean, who actually did sing the Greg Oden lyric, and he just said, my brother texted me that it was on. Oh, God, I will never live this Greg Oden story down. No, you won't. You won't, man.
As you should
so
not.
It's so funny. Cuthbert said it best during the break. He said he wishes that it was within his circle of friends. Like, it's the type of – it's so embarrassing that you're jealous that you don't have your friend to rip on for it. Like, I wish I knew Sean better so that I could crush him for this because it's so bad. You sang to Greg Oden, bro. That's the way that it is. He's like, you made up lyrics and sang to Greg Oden. It is just hilarious. It's an all-time cringer. Okay, so I've got a couple more. They're both pretty good. I want to read this one, though, from Jillian. So she sent me a DM. I had Glenn Gullitzen as a patient when I was working as a doctor in Calgary in April 2017. I didn't recognize him and tried to make small talk about the Flames. Told him that I thought they were absolutely terrible and would get swept by Anaheim in 4 games. I wasn't wrong, but it was awkward as hell when I realized. Yeah, that's really bad. Here's the thing, though, Jillian. That's not really a cringe. Like, it's cringeworthy in that you were embarrassed in that moment, but it is so badass that he's there to meet a doctor. I don't. Did you just, by the way, violate doctor-patient privilege? I don't know. Potentially, maybe Jillian just did that. Has to be asked. Has to be asked. Did you just violate it? It's kind of a big dog move that you did that. That's a really – hey, the Flames suck. You guys are going to get swept. He's like, wow. I just thought I was here to get my shoulder checked, and now you're in here just, you know, busting me up, saying my team is going to get swept by Anaheim 4 games. And then the fact that it came true, that you were right, he definitely had a moment. There's no way he didn't where he thought, damn, that doctor, she was right. You know, she nailed it. She should be the team doctor. Maybe we should have her kind of weighing in on this. So I want to say this is cringe because, yes, I totally understand that once you realized what had happened and transpired, you're probably sweating it out, feeling nervous, and feeling awful that you had done that to this guy. But it's not really a cringe story. If anything, it's kind of a badass, cool person story.
That's a baller story.
Yeah. It's like, so here's the Coles notes. I'm a doctor. I'm such a good doctor that the coach of the Flames would come to me in Calgary. And then I told him to his face that he sucks at his job. And then I correctly predicted that his team would get swept. It's honestly one of the more badass stories I've heard in a long time. Like, what part of this is where you're supposed to find the holes?
I expect that they were indeed swept. Like, yeah, lost in four.
Yeah.
Swept away. Glenn Gullitson nailed it exactly. I mean, you're right. Maybe cringy at the time, like after when you're like realizing, but in the moment and aged beautifully.
It would have been so great if she just owned it. She doubled down on it. And then when he left, she goes, take care, coach. You know, like hits him with that. Like, like makes it clear that she knew who he was on the way out. See, I'm into that. I don't know, Jillian. I think it's a pretty badass story. I'm kind of a big fan of it. Keep them coming. I'll still end up reading these. And if there's anything that's immediate or like that's especially great, I might even read it tomorrow if there is another good one. Tell your friends, tell your family. Tell them about this podcast, The Fan Morning Show. Subscribe to it, review it, like it. Follow on the socials. Have a video coming out today on Instagram on Austin Matthews.
Oh, do you?
Plenty of great stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Today we do.
What's the take? Give us a little tease.
Is
it that Austin Matthews is good?
Yeah, it is. It actually is. It's kind of when you put it that way. You know what's funny? Sometimes I finish these things, I go, huh, you know, I just basically spent 3 minutes explaining why I think Matthews is good. What a real hot take that was. Get it, though. You can hear it. It's the Fan Morning Show. See you tomorrow. Sports F5 Night of the Fan.